This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies in for Terry Gross. Music often plays a part in the work of our next guest, Irish film director John Carney. His 2007 independent film Once, about two struggling musicians in Dublin, was a surprise hit, winning an Oscar for Best Song and inspiring a Tony Award-winning Broadway musical. Carney's new film Sing Street, loosely based on his own life, is about a young teenager in Dublin in the 80s who discovers pop music and starts a band. The main character, Connor, is having a difficult time. His parents are constantly fighting and possibly splitting up. Because of their financial troubles, Connor is forced to change schools. In the new school, he's bullied by other boys and by the Catholic brothers who run it. One day he spots a girl and, to impress her, tells her he's in a band. He isn't, but quickly puts one together. Producer Anne-Marie Baldonado spoke to John Carney, and they started with a clip. Connor's band has made a cassette recording, and he's playing it for his older brother, Brendan, who's been schooling him on 80s pop music. Brendan doesn't like what he hears and is aggravated that it's a cover and not an original song, and he starts pulling the cassette apart. Connor is played by Ferdia Walsh-Pilo, and his brother Brendan is played by Jack Rayner.
That was bad, bad music, and there is nothing as bad in this world as bad music.
You know, you can record over tape.
No. That was a novelty act. You want to have actual sexual intercourse, right?
Yeah. Well, what?
The girl. It's all about the girl, isn't it?
Yeah, the girl, yeah.
And you're going to use somebody else's art to get her? Are you kidding?
We're just starting. Like, we need to learn how to play.
Do the Sex Pistols know how to play? You don't need to know how to play. Who are you, Steely Dan? You need to learn how not to play, Connor. That's the trick. That's rock and roll. And that takes practice. And you're not a covers band, by the way.
Really?
No. Every school has a covers band. Every pub has a covers band. Every wedding has a covers band. And every covers band has a middle-aged member who'll never know whether they could have made it in the music industry or not because they never had the to write a song for someone else. Rock and roll is a risk. You risk being ridiculed.
But I don't know how to write a song.
Close that door and sit down.
Really?
It's going to be a long night.
I have school in the morning.
This is school.
John Carney, welcome to Fresh Air.
Nice to be here.
Can you describe what Dublin was like in the 80s and the time that your movie takes place?
I felt that the 80s were the 60s. In Dublin, in a sense, if you know what I mean. Ireland didn't really have the 60s, the sexual liberation and the rest of the world had, or certain parts of the world. And so it came sort of 20 years later. So the 80s felt as a young kid that there was something going on. You know, a feeling that the church were finally sort of losing their grip. People were beginning to experiment with sexual identity. They were beginning to experiment more outrageously with clothes. And I think I was in school right in the middle of that period. And it was a very interesting place to be because it really felt like a very backward place. And it felt like it was just beginning to sort of change and come into its own.
Well, speaking of the Catholic Church's influence, the parents in the story, Connor's parents, are kind of in the process of ending their marriage. They wish they could divorce, but historically, I guess, at this time period, divorce wasn't legal in Ireland in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah, so people who wanted to get divorced still had to stay together, and that's sort of a tension in Connor's household.
I think that was the case in so many households, actually. I mean, firstly, the church wouldn't have permitted it. It was very, very rare that you would know of a street with a particular house that was like, oh, that's the couple who split up, because everybody else stuck together, and it was part of what you said and believed when you got married, but also it was supervised by the church and state, and it was also, there was another factor in all this, which was money. Mm-hmm. Nobody had any cash. You couldn't afford to have two cars or two lives or two flats or two houses. You stayed together because it's cheaper to run a family, right? It's cheaper to run one family under one roof than it is to run two.
Yeah, there is a scene at the very beginning of the film where Connor, the main character, is in his room writing a song, just fooling around on his guitar, and his parents are fighting outside, and he starts sort of incorporating the argument that they're having, like, if we didn't share a mortgage, I would leave you. And then he turns that into a lyric for the song. And it's kind of like you get the sense that the character is kind of processing what's happening through the music, but kind of escaping through the music as well.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's kind of like stand-up or something.
So the band that the group of kids start is called Sing Street, and they go to a school called Sing Street. And I think you shot there? Is that right?
Correct.
So you shot in the school that you went to when you were in high school. What was that like shooting back there?
It was like a prisoner coming back to Alcatraz, now that it's a sort of a tourist spot. School to me was like a prison. I didn't want to go, and I was a fish out of water. I wasn't a good student, so it felt very much like restraint. And so coming back as an adult, and also kind of particularly as a film director, you know, film directors, you know, it's a very hierarchical kind of thing, and you're at the top of the tree, and, you know, you kind of have a megaphone and jodhpurs and a whip, and you're the boss in a sense. So it was kind of funny being back in a position of complete authority from one of completely subservient student life, you know, 30 years earlier.
Now, the original songs in Sing Street are just wonderful. And in many of your films, you work with collaborators on the music. Could you give us an example from one of the songs where you and Gary Clark, and let me just say that Gary Clark was in the band Danny Wilson, which maybe in the U.S. their biggest hit was Mary's Prayer in the 80s, just to give a little background. Can you describe how the two of you came up with any song in particular? And if you could sort of point to the elements, the 80s elements that you wanted to make sure that were in that song.
On my songs, or the songs that I had sort of half written, he kind of put incredible choruses on them or great hooks lyrically. I can give you a good example. There's a song in the film, which is one of the first songs Connor writes, and it's called The Riddle of the Model. And the film is about a guy who sees a girl who claims she's a model, this young kid who's sort of 16-year-old. So I wrote that name, The Riddle of the Model. I thought it was very pretentious and very sort of appropriate for a young kid in the 80s. And he started adding in words like, you know, she's so indefinable, she holds the key to the missing code. And we started to form this song, which was sort of like, it's hard to describe, but there was a kind of like an art college movement in the sort of late 70s, early 80s in England of sort of, I'm too good for pop music. I'm kind of an artist and I'm an intellectual, but oh God, here we go. I have to be in a band. And to imagine being sort of 18 and you're still a little bit spotty, you've got a little bit of acne, but it's like 1981 and you've learned some big words from reading Albert Camus and you're now writing a song. We started from there and we put words like stipulation and we tried to put lots of long words and cram them into sort of poppy sort of choruses and key changes and stuff. And we just had a blast. And it was very good fun trying to actually write from that perspective, but also to try and keep it catchy and fun and try and keep the song sort of to have a sort of an 80s feel to it.
Well, why don't we take a listen to the song The Riddle of the Model from the movie Sing Street. It could also be found on the soundtrack.
She's standing on the corner like an angel in disguise. And as I look a little closer, she's got dangerous eyes. Tells me she's a model of international reputation. She's lying in a bottle, but there's a stipulation. She holds indecipherable. She holds the key to the missing code. Just the thought of her touch.
That was The Riddle of the Model from the movie and soundtrack Sing Street. Now, videos were very important to the character Connor. And of course, the 80s was sort of the birth of MTV and other kinds of music television. And there's this great scene where the main family is watching a Duran Duran video. And, you know, dad's saying, oh, this is rubbish. And the kids are sort of focusing on the video. Do you remember the first video you saw? And did it make an impact on you?
I mean, I certainly remember the moment around the sort of TV when Top of the Pops would come on a Thursday evening where my entire family and my grandmother included, you know, who was born in 1913, you know, and I was born in 1972 and would kind of sit around looking at the TV like we were sort of looking at fire. And in a sense, it was like sitting around the fireplace of an Irish country cottage, all gathered looking into the fire. This thing suddenly came on air And in it, the traditional idea of a music show where you would get a live band or a band miming to playback in an audience with a, or, you know, on a stage with an audience, was gone because bands were touring around the world. And somebody came up with this great idea of, let's shoot like a video which represents the band and we can just replay that whenever we want, which is a great marketing idea. But for the first 10 years of that, just nobody knew what they were doing. And they had a lot of money and a lot of cocaine, and they were making videos around the world in these exotic locations. And there was this great sense that, like, aliens had taken control of the TV and were, like, beaming in this stuff, these little escapist three-minute sort of films.
Do you think videos were important to you becoming interested in filmmaking? Notice that Connor's character, even for the first video, he has storyboards, you know, those illustrations that show each shot that he wants to get for the video. Did you make videos for your bands?
I did make videos for bands, but I think kind of the opposite in a way. It was very much, I looked at videos just as a means of representing the music, not as a film in and of itself. Not really anything to do with filmmaking. So when I moved from music into filmmaking, it was because I wanted to be François Truffaut or, you know, Martin Scorsese or whatever.
Was there a time for you when you felt like you had to choose between music and filmmaking? You know, you obviously use filmmaking as a way to examine music and the process of making music. But did you sort of have to consciously make a decision to give it up?
I did. And I remember the location of it, and I remember the feeling of it, and I remember my age. I was 20. And I was sitting on a bed in the Columbia Hotel, which is a very famous rock and roll hotel in London. And I was in a band, and we had a record deal. And I had a per diem. I had money in my pocket, and I was, you know, really as a young musician in school, I had arrived. This was sort of perfect. We were touring in England, and I just had this incredible feeling of dissatisfaction, and I had bought a Super 8 camera and I was starting to shoot silent movie footage, and I had a camcorder back in Dublin and we were doing sort of slasher videos and comedy sketches. And I remember being faced with this sort of decision that if I go with this band any further, it's going to be harder each year or month to turn back and do a new career, you know, reinvent myself or have a new career in filmmaking, which was really calling at me. And I remember quite distinctly sort of being faced with the decision of, do I leave this band? And there's money in this band. And it's kind of what I always wanted as a kid coming up, was to be in a band. That was sort of the dream. But at the time, actually, it was quite interesting. It was a no-brainer. The hard decision was only, oh, I'm going to be broke again.
I want to ask a question about your 2007 movie, Once. It's a critically acclaimed film and even became a Broadway show. And I always wonder, did you expect that this movie that you made, I think for around £100,000, would become this huge thing? This, you know, and
yes, of course, I planned it exactly
totally
the way it
knew it would be a Broadway show, a Tony winner.
As you do.
What was your reaction to all that?
It was funny. Last night, I met a very nice man called Paul Haggis at the screening of the film Sing Street. And we were talking about that idea of, like, well, what's your obituary going to say? What will you always be associated with? And I was laughing at the Once thing, which is like, I think I could make anything. My opening line is always going to be, oh, he's the guy who did that Once thing. And Paul Haggis laughed. For him, it's Crash. It's always, oh, you're the guy who did Crash. And owning up to that and realizing, okay, I've made a film that meant a lot to a bunch of people at a certain time. That's a wonderful thing, and you should never underestimate that, and you should never question it. And if that's the thing that you're remembered for, God bless it, and that's fantastic. And I really do believe that, and I'm aware that Once is going to be that thing. I mean, that film, everything that was happening to the story of Once was just an incredibly funny, wonderful page-turning episode in its story. We went to Sundance. Getting into Sundance, to me as an Irish independent filmmaker, was like winning the Booker. It was just like, I couldn't believe it. And then we won an award there, and then we went and we won an Independent Spirit Award, and people liked the film, and the soundtrack got a deal, and Glenn's career went on to just do beautiful things, and Marquetta, and everything seemed beautiful. I won an Academy Award. All this crazy stuff just kept on unfolding in the story of that film. And then these guys were like, we want to turn into a Broadway show. And I was like, okay, fine. You know, as if anything else good could happen to this little film.
I'd love to close with one of the original songs from Sing Street. Would you like to pick one? A song that was written by the band in the film and performed by the band?
Yeah, I think A Beautiful Sea is a nice song to end on. That's the one where they become Cure heads. You know, people who know The Cure and maybe even don't know The Cure will instantly recognize the comparisons to In Between Days, which is one of my favorite Cure songs. So there's a sort of an uplift in this song, a sort of an acoustic guitar-led sort of optimism and speed about its playing, which I really sort of enjoy. And it gives the film a great sort of sense of forward motion and sort of uplift that I really like. That'd be a nice way to end on.
John Carney, thank you so much.
Thank you.
John Carney's new film is Sing Street. He spoke with producer Anne Marie Baldonado.
Fake deals in the supermarket. TVs selling what you can get. She laughs, nowhere as pretty as this. Green cars crawling in slow lane. Lost stars waiting for the dark train. She smiles, turns and blows the city.
On tomorrow's show, China scholar Frank Decotter says newly opened archives document the chaos of the Cultural Revolution of the 60s, when Chairman Mao urged students to take to the streets.
You see teachers who have their hair torn out, pommeled by Red Guards. There are people being caned literally to death.
Decotter says the years of violence destroyed the credibility of the Communist Party and led to economic changes in the country. His book is The Cultural Revolution, A People's History. Hope you can join us. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our technical director and engineer is Audrey Bentham. Our associate producer for online media is Molly C.V. Nesper. Roberta Shorrock directs the show. For Terry Gross, I'm Dave Davies.